My slides up there, that'd be great. Awesome. Last week we started, we talked about vision. And I had, just for a moment before we began, just to have a time for you guys to reflect on some of the dreams you had when you were kids, what you thought you would want to be and where you are now. This morning I want to give you another moment to just kind of reflect. And I want you to reflect on some of the decisions that you've made or some of the decisions that were made for you, whether it's because of another person or a circumstance, and think about these decisions that have brought you to where you are today. What if some of those decisions were made differently? Where would you be? Are you holding any of those things in your heart? I want you to just take a moment and think through some of those life decisions that have happened in your life that have brought you to this point. Which ones are the ones that give you a smile? And which are the ones that you think back and think, what if? Hold on to thought. Hold on to even some of those feelings. This morning, we're going to continue on our journey with Nehemiah. We're going to continue about what does vision mean for us personally, but also as God's community, God's people. Someone asked me last week, what does a vision actually look like? And, we were discussing images that so many churches love to pull out, I mean, including us. Rhyme, or that sound really good, or that are acronyms, or all this stuff. And the idea around it, the question around it was, well, what does that actually look like? What does a vision look like? And I came up with 3 points this week, and I thought, okay, if you would ask me what it looks like this. It's big thinking, but it's also practical. Am I cutting in and out? I'm okay now. Okay, well, I'll hold this on just in case. It's big thinking, okay? But it's practical. Big thinking is, I want to change the world. But then there's the practicality of, well, how's that going to happen? Vision is actually practical. People think it's just some pie in the sky. But actually, it requires you to think big, but it's got to be practical. You've got to reach it. So for me to say, I want to go to the moon, yeah, that's not really practical. Might happen, but I doubt it. Vision is big thinking, but it's also practical. It's not a dream, okay? A dream, by its definition, is a dream, right? Vision is achievable. It has to be achievable. If not, you're not going to strive towards it. You will lose heart very quickly. So when we think about it as a church, and I've heard so many people say this, it drives me crazy. We are dreaming. We want to see revival happen. We want to see hundreds coming to Christ. And my thing is, you've been thinking about that for the last 30 years. Do you think there's a reason why it's not happening? Why don't you just start with one or two or 10? 10 people, 10 lives changed for Christ. That's achievable. And when you do that, let's talk about another 10 or a 20. Let's step it up. Sometimes the dream makes it so unachievable that the church just falls into a rut. We fall into a rut of thinking, oh, well, it's there. It's not really achievable. It's also the center. The vision has to be the center of everything we do. Right? And by being the center, it means it's got to be measurable. We've got to be able to measure out the vision. How are we going? What's going on here? How is this working out? Are we reaching the vision? Are we reaching that achievable goal? These are the basics vision really looks like. You think about some of our Bible stories when we look at someone like Abraham, go to Canaan. It's achievable, it's practical, and it's measurable. It's a big vision, though, because God is giving him this land, not just for him, but for all the thousands that will come after him. Look at Joseph. You're going to be a person of influence. Well, for Joseph, it was a certain point in time where that just seemed very far away, when he was in prison, falsely accused. How am I going to be a person of influence? Right now I'm measuring this and it's not looking good. But there was a big picture there. There was a big goal that was practical. I need you to be a person of influence because you know what? One day I'm going to need you to help some other people out. Think of David being king, or even someone like Paul reaching the Gentiles. And no one, we don't think about what Paul just did, you know, reaching the Gentiles. We think of that as just the norm today, but back then that was radical. That was big picture thinking. But it was practical and it was measurable. He went from town to town. He mapped it out. He got permission to go out and do it. He followed the path and did something that was quite radical for the Jews of the day, because they thought they were the chosen people, not the Gentiles. Vision is practical, it's achievable, and it's measurable. I was talking to Pam. I said, I've got an acronym that's got your name in it, Pam. You're practical, achievable, and measurable. There you go. No one's going to forget that now. It's Pam. That's what vision looks like. In 2006, we had this vision to plant a church in what was becoming a new development in South Sacramento, a place they called Elk Grove. And like Californians in particular, when they start building a suburb, they build everything, and really quickly. You know, it's not like a Transmission Gully that takes 20 years, right? They build a whole town in the space of a couple of years, right? Okay, and so, yeah, Baptist Churches of the West, which formed part of this group called Growing Healthy Churches, came to Australia looking for two people to plant a church, a Baptist church, in Elk Grove. And unfortunately, myself and my friend were picked. And we went off, and we had a vision. We had a vision for the place, for the town. And the vision was pretty big for us at the time. We didn't have anyone. It was just us. And we wanted to do, in 2 years, this was our vision: to get 20 baptisms, 200 regular attendance, have a parcel of land purchased, and be an influence on the city of Elk Grove. This was our vision. This is what we wanted to see happen. We wanted to see lives changed for Christ, people growing in faith, and having a home, a place for people to come to. That was the three parts of our vision. You know, in 6 months, we got the first two done. In 9 months, the church folded. And there is a reason why it fell apart. By the way, that's my Jessica when she was 3 years old. There was a reason why it folded. It's something that happens to a lot of people with great vision. Distractions came and took away from the path that we were on. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning, distractions. If you go to your Bibles, open up to the book of Nehemiah. You need to always remember this, people. When it comes to vision, even for us as a church, but for you as individuals as well, we need to watch out for distractions. We, as good old Rob Bell says, everything is spiritual. And we are not on our own in this. The moment we start moving for God, Satan likes to move us in an opposite direction. And for some reason, distractions will come in all shapes and forms to distract us from the vision that God has given us. We've had that as a church. You will have that as an individual. So Nehemiah, chapter 6, verses 1 to 2. When the word came to Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem the Arab, and the rest of our enemies that I had rebuilt the wall, and not a gap was left in it, though up to that time I had not set the doors and the gates, Sanballat and Geshem sent me this message, "Come, let us meet together in one of the villages on the plain of Ono." Now, he had worked really hard, Nehemiah. We followed the story the last couple of weeks where he's gone from Babylon, he's come and he's now built this wall. He'd been made, you know, been making fun of him. They thought they'd never be able to build anything. But this vision is now coming. It's happening. And these people around him were giving him stick. They were causing a bit of heartache for him. And now there is wonderful opportunity for Nehemiah as a leader to stop the work and go chat with these people who are wanting to have a chat. Hey, this is a great moment where they can see what we've done and we can get them on side. And hey, this is great. One of the interesting things about distractions is that they sometimes present themselves as opportunities. It's easy for us to stop and look at something. Oh, man, that's cool. We could do this. But is it actually distracting us from the vision? What is the vision? The vision for Nehemiah was to build a wall. He wasn't going there to peacemake. He wasn't going there to make everybody happy and keep everybody on side. He had a goal, and it was to build a wall. And regardless of how good a thing it might have been, which it wasn't, he's not there to make people happy. He's there to build a wall. And his response is really interesting. He goes, "I'm carrying on a great project and cannot go down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and go down to you? Thanks, but no thanks. I've got to be focused on this." What opportunities in your life right now are distracting you from the vision God has given you? What distractions that are in the form of opportunities are pulling you away from the vision God has given you? What opportunities do you think are distracting us as God's church from the vision that he's given us? Going on from verses 5 to 9 in chapter 6, these guys are persistent. They really want to meet with Nehemiah. Then the fifth time, Sanballat sent his aide to me with this same message, and in his hand was an unsealed letter in which was written, "It is reported among the nations, and Geshem says it's true, that you and the Jews are plotting to revolt, and therefore you are building the wall. Moreover, according to these reports, you're about to become their king and have even appointed prophets to make the proclamation about you in Jerusalem. There is a king in Judah. Now this report will get back to the king, so come, let us meet together." There's a bit of a threat there, eh? I won't even begin to tell you how many threats might be out there in your own life or in the life of our church. The thing that really weighs under this is one word, and that is criticisms. Criticisms come in the form of threats. They come in the form of lies. They come in the form of judging. They are made to make us feel bad. They are made to make us question what we're doing. They're made to make us feel worried. Made for us to have to feel like we've got to respond to it. It's like the emails or the concerns. All they do is distract us from the vision God has given us. This is pretty serious. Criticism or this threat. If it gets back to the king, it was the king that gave Nehemiah the right to go and do what he's doing. He wouldn't be happy if Nehemiah was using that against him. But it's a lie. It's a distraction. I can tell you, and everybody knows this because most of you feel the same way, you can get 30,000 emails all positive, you get one negative one, and that ruins the day completely. Why? Why? If you've got an answer, that'd be great, because I'm genuinely asking why. Why do I allow it to ruin my day when things, I know the vision, I know the direction. Why do we allow these things to niggle at us? Why do we allow that one person who says, you could have preached better this Sunday, Rob. Or you could have done a better job. Or you could have done this. Or I don't like that. Or you shouldn't be doing this. Or God told me. Why do we let it get to us? Well, for one thing, we're deeply human. And one thing a lot of people don't realize, you know it, I know it, but we all struggle with whether or not we're doing the right thing. This following Sunday evening service, we've got a couple of things happening. There'll be a spiritual track happening, but there'll also be what we call the theological track. It'll actually be a town hall, and I'm going to open up a discussion around doubt. And what does doubt mean if you're a follower of Jesus? And how does that work in the aspect of faith? I think there's just this belief that because other people around us believe all these things that we have to believe it as well. But there are times in which we don't. There are times in which we wake up in the morning and think, am I just crazy? There are times in which everyone's got their hands raised, they're worshiping God, and we're standing there going, I'm not feeling it. Or when someone says, I want to pray for you, and you want to say, please don't. Anyone feel like that? Because let me tell you, I feel like that. Not every day. But there are times in which I feel that. Distractions, especially in the forms of threat or in the forms of criticism, distract us from the vision that God has given us. Take us away. So that we have to go put that fire out. And we come out of that dirty, tired, so we don't have the energy to keep going. Nehemiah focused on what God had sent him there for. He stayed with it regardless. But there is also another incident. Keeping going from verses 10 to 12. One day I went into the house of Shemaiah, son of Deliah, the son of Mehetabel, who was shut in at his home. He said, let us meet in the house of God, inside the temple. Let us close the temple doors because men are coming to kill you. By night, they're coming to kill you. That's a distraction. Imagine you go over and visit someone and go, hey, let's go have a hamburger together. Rob, let's run back to the church. Someone's going to kill you. Okay, cool. What was the vision again? I can't remember. Distraction can always be fear. Fear is a distraction. It's really interesting if you hear his response. This is Nehemiah's response. He goes, but I said, should a man like me run away, or should someone like me go into the temple to save his life? I will not go. I realized that God had not sent him, but that he had prophesied against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. He had been hired to intimidate me. He said I would commit a sin by doing this, and then they would give me a bad name to discredit me. It's really interesting that he uses those words. He had been hired to intimidate me so that I would commit a sin. What was the sin that he's committing? Think about it. What's this sin he's committing? Not following the vision. That's how seriously he's taking this. If they're going to kill me, let them kill me. I've got a vision. God's given it to me, and I need to get it done. Whoa! Think about that for a moment. Do you think there is fear in this guy? Let me tell you, yeah, I'd imagine if he's human, there would be just a little bit of fear. It would be just a little bit of fear. But he knows what God has done for him. He knows what God's plan is. And it doesn't feel at times that it's working. There seems to be things thrown in the way. There are people against me. There are all sorts of these things that are going on to distract me from it. But I know what God said. I know what God wants from me. I'm just going to do it. Sometimes you get a calling and you go and you wonder what God is doing in it. And you get distracted from one thing or another and you get disheartened. Circumstances happen that stop you, that make you fall out of it, and then you start to wonder, should I go back and do it, or should I do this? Maybe God's taking me there. Be careful of distractions. They will be coming in the form of opportunities or criticism or fear. They could be in the form of health, of broken relationships, or people pulling at you. We as a church, if we followed everyone's idea, plan, we would be all over the place. We can read about Nehemiah today and look and know his motives, know that it's going to work out well. We can see the end picture of what's happening here. But he didn't know the end picture. He didn't know what it was going to look like. He had no idea at the beginning of what he was even going to face. And during it, he didn't even know if he could finish it. It's easy for us to pick up a book like this and read it and say, ha ha, look, he got it done. Good on him. Well done. Who was it that you... Stuart Plester. Where are they? Nehemiah. Apparently he's a short guy. Yeah, no, that didn't make anybody laugh. Sorry, mate. Oh, it was a bad delivery. Let's blame that. He had no idea what he was getting himself into. He didn't know what the end would look like. And we don't know what the end's going to look like. You don't know what the end's going to look like. You might want to try and guess. You might want to try and see that it's going to be this way or that way. But let me just tell you one thing. God never uses the playbook. There is no rule or line that he follows. He follows his own line. All he asks us, all he's ever asked us, is to stay true to the calling that he has given us. For you individually, for us as a church. And like I said on day one, everybody in this room is called. Everybody in this room has a calling. And there's nothing small about it. There's nothing insignificant about it. If it's a call from God, it's a call from God. The challenge for you this week is this. What are the distractions in your life right now that are taking you away from what God has for you? What are the distractions that are pulling you away from where God is leading you to be? I challenge you because there are many of you in this room who are being distracted. And I challenge you to challenge me and our leadership so that we don't get distracted. Because what is it that's distracting us as God's church? That's the challenge for you this week. I want you to just take a moment. The team's going to come up. I want you just to take a moment and think about those decisions that you were thinking about earlier. Maybe some decisions you made are distracting you today. Maybe there is something going on that is holding you back, that you feel is holding you back. What are those distractions? Just take a moment and let God's Spirit speak to your heart.